This is the Oanda Podcast.
This is the Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the world. Let's join Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Let's start with one of the big stories of the week, and of course, the collapse of cryptocurrency FTX and the ramifications of that collapse roll on.
Very much so. I think this is the week where we've been talking about who is going to be impacted. I mean, you know, the media coverage, it's gone from talking about Larry David, Tom Brady, Stephen Curry. These are the celebrities who endorsed the crypto exchange. And now some of the questions are they going to face lawsuits? You know, last month we saw Kim Kardashian have to pay over a $1 million fine for her involvement with a pump and dump scheme called Ethereum Max. This is different though. This is you've had one of the more, what was believed by many to be a reputable cryptocurrency exchange that was now being accused of taking clients' monies and placing risky bets. And this is something that we're still, you know, processing. And I think right now the main focus is on who else is exposed to this. And that's one of the big question marks. You know, the companies that are, you know, this fallout is spreading to include BlockFi, Genesis, Voyager, Galaxy Digital, Gemini, and even Coinbase. Now, Coinbase, they had a very small exposure to it, but still, it's important to understand just how deep FTX ran through the cryptoverse. And what's even more fascinating is just the actions of SBF and his, you know, the hope that we saw earlier that maybe Binance was going to rescue them. And then they saw the books and then they said, no, no, we're not doing that. And then SBF signaling that, okay, well, we're still going to try to find this $8 billion shortfall. And now you're seeing, you know, he's clearly was not suitable to be a CEO. He mismanaged things. He did not understand the situation. And obviously, the allegations, it seems that the trading of, you know, clients' money is you know, going to lead to bigger problems for FTX and the people that were involved with those actions, if that comes out to be true, which, it, you know, right now all the reporting suggests that it seems likely. Now, I think the problem is that, you know, you had a what was viewed as you know, a key currency exchange commingling funds, using funds with leverage. It just it's hard to imagine that this was transpiring. Especially I think what was also catching a lot of people off guard was that, you know, throughout all of this, you know, there's FTX.com, and then, you know, there's the international business, and then there's the U.S. one. And it was kind of believed that the U.S. business was going to be safe and isolated from this. A couple days of this story evolving, you have bankruptcy declared, and it shows you that, you know, there's a lot of concern here as far as, you know, what was happening with FTX, and I think you're right to expect regulation is going to be severe here. You're right now for FTX, you know they're based out of the Bahamas. The Bahamas regulators, they're holding some of FTX's assets, but it seems they lost a lot of money. And I think that, you know, the focus is now, okay, well, how big of an impact is this? And I think when you hear, I think when everyone was talking about this exchange, this is one of the top ones. And I think when you consider what's happened with cryptos in general, obviously, yes, there was a major sell-off, but I think a lot of people are surprised that we haven't pushed much lower. And that's where, that's like kind of where the big question mark is. And I think what we have to kind of take a look at, FTX, how big were they in this market? And for cryptos, you know, FTX, they had about, and this is hard because you could say off of trading volumes or number of users, but it's believed that they had around a low single-digit percentage of the global market share, around 3 to 5%. Now, if that is true, and just looking at the small amount of clients they had relative to the volumes that they were seeing, it suggests that a good portion of that was institutional investors, which means the institutional investor, they have a stomach that can handle risk. So I think that you're seeing this crypto, a lot of people are saying it's now an ice age, but I think that you're seeing, you know, this crypto winter has been prolonged, and there's expectations that you know, we won't know the complete fallout for months, and that's where kind of I think, you know, crypto remains in limbo, and that's one of the big question marks here. So I think you're going to see the scrutiny come to the other key exchanges. Binance is getting a very close look at right now, and you know, the CEO, CZ, has been pretty transparent, at least doing frequent interviews, explaining how, as far as their core holdings, one third is with stablecoins, one third is with crypto. So, I mean, obviously, if crypto goes under, that's a big concern. But their specific coin, BNB, is kept separate. They don't make that a part of their cash reserves, which is important to understand. So I think we're going to see the expectations for this market. You're going to have everyone, you know, pay close attention to, okay, well, what's the story behind Binance, Coinbase, and then even some of the other ones like L Banking. There's a Coinsbit and DigiFinex. So I think you're going to see that the scrutiny is not going to go away anytime soon, but it is remarkable to see how strong crypto is putting up a fight here. And this is coinciding with a little bit of market jitters with for the broader appeal for risk appetite. So this has been quite the week for crypto. Volatility is probably not going away, but I think at the end of each week, we end up having more questions than answers.
But despite this crypto contagion, Bitcoin has been doing pretty well this week. Last time I looked, up about 4% since Monday.
And that's the big question mark. I mean, earlier we saw there was a strong move here for risk appetite. There was earlier beliefs that the soft landing was intact, that we were going to see risk appetite hold up fairly well. But now I think there's expectations that this is just another bear market rally. So, you know, will Bitcoin hold on to the 16,000 level? That's a big question mark. You know, when at the peak hysteria of the FTX collapse, you know, I was, you know, for me, 14,500 was the key level, and that was the level that I said if that breaks, you know, that takes us below the cycle low. That takes us, you know, that raises the red flag for a lot of investors, and you know, we're seeing prices stabilize here. So I think this is going to be a momentum trade. You know, the institutional money, they can short it, they can trade it off the exchange. They're going to love this volatility. So if the overall broader appetite for risk, you know, starts to dwindle as we go into the holidays, this could be a very tough period for crypto. But if we see inflation come down further, I think, you know, right now the bad news has been priced in. Unless we have a major breakup or a downfall of a key exchange or crypto company, I think, you know, crypto's poised to trade between 16 and 17,000. You know, the risks are still to the downside. I think that this resilience, there was some exhaustion from selling. And I think a lot of the institutional money, it got locked up. So some assets are frozen. Some people have lost their ammunition. So I think you're probably going to see this is a difficult time for crypto. But no, I think you're probably going to see the volatility have days where, you know, things get ugly very quickly. And I think that's why it's important to, remind yourselves that we're entering a period where there could be some illiquid conditions. Thanksgiving holiday, Black Friday, you could see some significant moves during that weekend period and holiday period. So I think traders need to be aware that just because we've been kind of consolidating around 16,005 or 400, that doesn't mean we're not going to have a major $1,000 or $2,000 move and these next few days.
Let's switch to commodities now, and more specifically gold, and that's on the down this week. Is this mainly due to the Federal Reserve?
I think you can blame it on the Fed. I think they have been pushing back on a rates pause. The amount of Fed speak that we've gotten has been very hawkish. I think for a lot of investors, there was kind of this belief that we're approaching the December meeting. The Fed has signaled they're going to downshift. Yet we're getting is hawkish speak. For a lot of people, like today, Fed's calling saying that the 75 basis point rate hike is still on the table for December. And I think what you're probably seeing, a lot more traders are getting a little nervous here, is that you had Fed Bullard, who outlined his model for interest rate. The dovish scenario, we could stop at 5 to 5.25. His more hawkish scenario is that rates could go up to 7%. So you're having a very clear pushback here that, the Fed is fixated on winning this fight against inflation. The labor market is still strong. You're seeing yes, there's been a lot of tech job layoff announcements. There's been clear signs that the economy is losing momentum. But when you take a look at the job openings, you still have several million openings available. You still have consumers that are spending. You still have we're getting mixed outlooks. Walmart and Target kind of conflicted here on the health of the consumer. There's really, I think, this belief that the economy is not weakening quickly enough for the Fed to justify a pause. And that's why I think when you take a look at money markets, yes, December 14th, it should be a half point increase. The debate on February is between between a quarter and a half point. And then I think even on March, there's still an 80% chance that you could still see them deliver a quarter point increase. So, I mean, you're probably going to see that the Fed is going to, at the very least, take rates to 5%. If inflation is trickier and stickier, that is, they're going to need to continue raising rates. Now, if they end up delivering, two or three more half point rate increases, that brings us to 5.5%. That is much more restrictive than the markets are pricing in. And that's been kryptonite for gold. I think gold is struggling. Whenever we see pushback from the Fed, it seems like it's bad news for gold. Gold was on the verge of breaking out above. It seemed that it was on a path towards above 1800. Now it seems like, no, it's probably going to consolidate between around 1740, 1780, heading towards the Thanksgiving holiday. So I think a lot of investors here, they're nervous. The Fed pushback is strong. And when you take a look at some of the leading indicators, the labor market's not weakening quickly enough. And I think, when you take a look at initial expectations for, the December non-farm payroll, we're still eyeing, significant job gains here. I think that the market is, still anticipating about 200,000 jobs created in for the November non-farm payroll report, which comes out on December 2nd. So there's a lot of fears that wage pressures trouble with companies refraining from delivering layoffs that is going to keep inflationary pressures, going strong throughout the first quarter, which means the Fed might still be raising rates at that half point pace. beyond February. So I think there's a lot of nervousness here that we're in a bear market rally. Stocks are probably vulnerable to further pressures here, I think right now gold is could eventually become a safe haven again when we get that recession. But I think for now, it's still going to be more behaving like a risky asset. So gold's going to remain volatile here, but I think there's a lot of uncertainty with the Fed's path right now as far as at what point will they really pause. And we're not going to get those answers until we see the next couple more inflation reports.
Gold is down, Ed, as is oil, which is also volatile. Brent and WTI down around 3% today.
It's been a very bad week for the physical demand part of oil. There's been China's COVID situation, which is approaching record levels. You have central banks aggressively still raising rates, which is starting to raise those recessionary fears. I think there's clear demand destruction that's happening. And I think right now, this is all happening before we have that expected European ban on Russian crude, which happens in the first week of December. So I think a lot of people were kind of anticipating that as a bullish catalyst. You had some reports or analysts saying that it might not necessarily really impact Russian output that much. And I think that really took a lot of energy traders by surprise. So I think oil market is right now seeing technical based selling, but there's a lot of confusion right now what's happening in the market. And I think that as long as China's demand is heading in the wrong direction, it's going to be tough for oil prices to muster up a rally here. But I think in the end, there's still healthy world demand for crude. I think we're probably getting close to a short-term bottom here. But I mean, once WTI broke below 80, the technical selling was pretty strong. And I think this is a market that's still tight. U.S. economy is headed towards a recession, but as we approach the holiday periods, I think there's still strong expectations. It's going to be a very busy travel period. Whenever China, is able to ease up on some of those COVID restrictions, there's so much pent-up demand that I think you'll see that prices will bounce back strongly. But right now, it just doesn't seem that that's the case. I think people are waiting to see a peak with their cases before becoming aggressive back into oil. So this is right now a market that's kind of so much fixated on the demand side. But I mean, the supply side does, support that prices should stabilize soon.
Geopolitically, Ed, it's been a pretty dramatic week with the G20 meeting in Bali. We've had the final results of the midterm elections where you are, and of course the big autumn statement from the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK. So it's been a pretty busy week. What lies in store for the next 7 days?
Well, for me, I have a big star on my calendar for November 20th. The World Cup begins. I think that is a welcome break from all the geopolitical coverage that we provide.
Although, of course, it hasn't managed to escape the political angle with the controversy of it being in Qatar either. And there are many who have mixed feelings about this tournament, but let's not get too focused on that. It is good to have some respite, and it's going to be quite strange having a World Cup during the heart of winter.
Very much so. And I think for a lot of people next week, it is a holiday week, a shortened trading week for many. In the U.S., we observe Thanksgiving. A lot of people also take off the Friday. There will be limited trading for stocks and bonds on Friday. So you really have 3 days of where you try to jam in a lot of economic data points. There is still, we haven't talked about North Korea and their missile launches. We haven't talked about the war in Ukraine. President Zelensky is going to be speaking at NATO on Monday. I think there's still a lot of geopolitical risk that remains on the table. And that's first and foremost, probably one of the key drivers for a lot of investors. And I think you're probably going to see that, next week is going to be a very busy week with central bank rate decisions. You have the New Zealand Central Bank, the RBNZ. They're expected to raise rates by 75 basis points. A couple weeks ago, people were thinking they were going to downshift, but hot inflation, that changed their mind, or is expected to have changed their mind to keep that 75 basis point pace. You're going to see the Riksbank is expected to also raise rates by 75 basis points, taking their key rate to 2.5%. South Africa also to deliver another massive rate increase, bringing their target rate to 7%. The Turkish Central Bank is expected to cut rates, so we have lots of rate decisions. In addition to that, for the U.S., we get the FOMC minutes, which I think a lot of people are expecting to be somewhat hawkish and a little bit of a pushback on all those downshift calls that have been building. We also get the flash PMI readings, which will probably continue to show a weakening in the service sector, which is going to be key for, I think, investors anticipating that if the service sector starts to cool quickly, that will be the derailment in the labor market hiring picture that we can't seem to get away from. And I think there's probably going to be, I think, a lot of emphasis on, in addition to that, some of the key readings from Europe, Germany's IFO business climate is going to be key. I think a lot of traders too are going to be focused on their respective flash PMI readings as well. But overall, it's a week that's filled with some Fed speak. You also will hear from quite a few ECB members as well. South African president is going to have a state visit to the UK too. So lots of talk from some of the world leaders. The OECD will release its economic outlook. But I think a lot of traders, what they need to do is be very cautious as far as some choppy markets. You have some expirations. You also have, I think on Friday will be an interesting day because it is a shortened trading day. And also too, as far as the health of the U.S. economy, a lot of people will pay attention to that high frequency data for Black Friday. You'll start to get some of those reports. If you see pictures of shopping malls being not too busy, I think that's your sign that the U.S. economy has definitely hit a rough patch. But I think for a lot of families, this is the key week where they try to get all their holiday shopping done. So just because we have a strong Black Friday performance doesn't mean that we'll continue to do strong retail sales numbers for December.
Ed, have a very good weekend and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
This is the Oanda Podcast.